Canto 2, chapter 9, answers by citing the Lord's version. Today we go from text number 10 up to 19. So here's the 10th text. Now you should notice here we're starting to get into some heavy high poetry here. And if you read them in Sanskrit, they're quite beautiful. In that personal abode of the Lord. Okay, so now Brahma is now granted this darshan. In the previous verse, he was the Lord manifest his abode to Brahma. As will be clear from later on, Brahma is still sitting on his seat. He hasn't moved. He didn't have to travel anywhere. But he's sitting on his seat and it's manifest to him. And so now we begin the description of that abode. This is first is a kind of general description here, right, of the characteristics of it. In that personal abode of the Lord, it says here, there is no, the material modes of ignorance and passion do not prevail, nor is there any of their influence in goodness. You know how to say there, neither of rajas and tamas are there, sattvam cha misram, and no mixture of those with sattva. Nor cha kala vikramaha, nor is there any power, nor does time have any power. Nor is there any force or influence of time. He says, there's no predominance of the influence of time. What to speak of? Maya. The illusory external energy, it cannot enter that region. Now here's the last part. We believe there's a mistake in this text. Without discrimination, both demigods and demons worship the Lord as devotees. This seems to say that in the spiritual world there are devotees and demons who are devotees who worship the Lord. It seems that the mistake is, should read like this, without discrimination, both the demigods and the demons worship the Lord's, Lord apostrophe S, devotees, that is, the ones who are in the spiritual world. And that's what the Sanskrit seems to say. Because the word for devotees, anuvrataha, which is the Harer Anuvrataha, the devotees of the Lord in the plural. And this is the direct object. And there in the spiritual world, Surasura Archita are worshipped by both the demigods and the demons. This is the way the commentators read them, the demons being like Prahlad, Bali, and so on. So the devotees in the spiritual world. I think it says they're parshadas. Associates. Is that the parshada means? Associates of the Lord. Worship there. It's Vaikuntha that everybody worships them. Okay, so that's just, I will send a note, there is a COM conference for mistakes in the English edition. There's a whole bunch, I've started contributing that regularly because you keep running across it. So I'm pretty sure this is just where it's the Lord's devotees and somehow that got misread as Lord as devotees.
Hello?
Yes?
Yeah, this one. I'm just quoting from a Prabhupada lecture on that. I hope this is compatible with what we've just been discussing, because Prabhupada says that Prabhupada is referring to sura chitaha. There is no more distinction between sura and asura. Here, asuras, they are not devotees, but they deny. So asura, how the asura goes there? Asura does not go there as asura, but he goes there as devotee.
So he takes it that way, huh? Okay. Well, I don't. Anyway. But anyway, in any case, there are no asuras in the spiritual world, right? If they go there, they're not, they're devotees. Okay. Now we go to, I have a feeling it's still not. So now we want to, first Prabhupada talks about, again, the atmosphere of Vaikuntha, the tree pod, the Vibhuti, and Prabhupada talks about how people cannot of themselves do not have the power to become God, neither to know anything about transcendence. So let us know, through the authority of Srimad Bhagavatam, of the nature and constitution of the transcendental world beyond the material sky. In that sky, the material qualities, no psychosis, especially the modes of ignorance and passion, are completely absent.
Good,
yeah. And because there's no lust and hankering and so on. Whereas, by contrast, so they are Brahma Bhuta, and Sochati and Akanchati, in a state of transcendence, there is neither hankering nor lamentation. So the conclusion is that the inhabitants of Vaikuntha planets are all Brahma-bhuta living entities, as distinguished from the mundane creatures who are all compact in hankering and lamentation. Packed up in, I think Prabhupada means by that. When one is not in the modes of ignorance and passion, one is supposed to be situated in the mode of goodness in the material world. So now there's material goodness. Goodness in the material world also at times becomes contaminated by touches of the modes of passion and ignorance. So the three modes are described as always being wound around each other or close to each other. And they're always replacing each other. And so no one actually in the material world is in pure goodness unless they're transcendental. The sattva of the material world, there's always some little bit of rajas and tamas. But Vaikuntha, it is unalloyed goodness, that is goodness not mixed with anything else. The word alloy, you know, when you have an alloy, a metal alloy, is the metal is worked with something, mixed with something else. Like steel is an alloy of iron. Take iron, you add certain things, and you become steel. So this is not mixed, yeah.
Does the word sattva, does that have something to do with, kind of related to eternal nature?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It does.
Like close to spiritual, almost, you could sort of kind of...
Is what?
Almost spiritual, or light spiritual.
No, it means spiritualness, sattness. Mm-hmm. So the tva is like N-E-S-S in English, the Sanskrit tva. Sattva. And so the word sat has so many meanings in Sanskrit, but the basic idea is something that exists is sat. But when we say something exists, The idea is that if it exists, or it also means real, and if something that exists only temporarily is called unreal, because here it's not, and there it's not. Here's a little bit of temporary existence, so it's practically not there. So it's not considered as sat. Sat is temporary. Sat means also good. Or true. Everything you say is. So we have these three things: sat, chit, and ananda. Sat having to do with existence, or let us call it the act of being. Chit, the act of knowledge, and then the act of pleasure, enjoyment. You know, these three are found elsewhere, this dryad. In Plato, he describes transcendence as the good, the true, and the beautiful. The good is the object of our ethical actions, which attained by acting well. The true, the object of our knowledge, and the beautiful, the object of our aesthetic, or the source of anything that's good here is this from there. Anything that is true here is from there. Anything that is beautiful here, the good, the true, and the beautiful. But they also correspond to sat, willing, thinking, and feeling. The three functions of the mind: thinking, feeling, and willing. They also seem to correspond on another level with that triad. So, but here when we come to the modes of nature, the sat he chants that here it is goodness, right? Sattva. Sattva. But it's almost like because the spiritual world, of which the Krishna is the Lord of the spiritual world, which is pure sat, when there's some sattva in the material world, he takes charge of that part of it. Then Prabhupada wants us to know that the illusion talking about Maya as illusory, but he wants to point out that if it's an illusion, it's a real illusion. This is in contradistinction to the Maya bodies, who really want to say it doesn't exist. Technically speaking, what they say is that Maya cannot be spoken of either as existing or as not existing. But really, they deny the energies of the Lord. Brahma Satyam Jagan Nitya. It's false and it's not really there. So Prabhupada, this is the example of the illusion that's given. You walk into a dark room and there's a rope coiled up. There's a rope coiled up in the corner. And you see it, you see a snake. I mean, if you have that experience, you just see it as a snake. And then you look again, you blink your eyes, oh, it's a rope. But you could have sworn you saw the head, the eyes, you know. And the idea is you have the idea of a snake, which you impose upon the rope. And this is called, what's the Sanskrit? Illusory superimposition.
Adhyarupa.
Huh? Adhyarupa, yeah. Illusory superimposition.
Or adhyasa.
Huh?
Or adhyasa,
yeah. So you, and that's what it is. It really doesn't exist. the rope is there, and there's no snake. Okay. That's how the world comes about. Of course, if you ask whose illusion is it, then you have a problem. It can't be the jiva's illusion, because the jiva is already a product of illusion. So it has to be Brahman's illusion. But how can Brahman come under illusion? So it's just free-floating illusion that doesn't seem to belong to anybody. And therefore they have to say, well, it doesn't really exist. Yeah?
I just found this verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita. It said, all these pure devotees of the Lord who are worshipped, forced by demons and demigods, reside in the spiritual world as Lord's associates. That what you said.
So he translated it that way in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I should have looked, actually, because all these verses are on the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Yeah.
Chaitanya Matya 22:270.
Because that's actually what the Sanskrit does say. I mean, it's not a particularly complicated sentence or anything.
By implication, it means that, the one thing that Vishwanath said, by implication, it means that the asuras who are worshipping these parshadas
become
are devotees.
Are devotees, right.
But not that it's asuras in the spiritual world.
Yeah, once they get there, they're not asuras anymore, by definition, right? Yeah.
But here they are asuras, and if they're in Prahlad Maharshi's family, don't worship Prahlad
Maharshi. Well, I'm an asura.
Yes.
You're not there.
Prabhupada called his Western disciples, he compared us to Prahlad Maharaj, because we were born in Asura Kula. So anyway, the world is actually, the energy of the Lord is actually the Lord's energy. It's not something fictitious. He has this energy. It's one of the energies of the Lord. It's his real energy. The souls in it become illusion by it. And this energy, although it's the Lord's energy and is in relationship to him, within that energy you can't forget the Lord. So then after discussing the material energy, he says, but this energy of the Lord is not all. Excuse me. The Lord has his internal energy also, which has another creation known to be the Vaikuntha Lokas, where there is no ignorance, no passion, no illusion, and here he says no past and present. So, there is another energy, or as Prabhupada said it somewhere, I forget where he says, there is another nature. When you say the word nature, you have to ask, whose nature? And it's Krishna's nature. And then he says, there is another nature. So when somebody says something is natural, remember that there's another nature which is natural. Choose your nature which you want to belong to. So the excuse for so many sinful activities is it's natural. But that's in this nature. There's another one. Remember that, huh? So here he has another energy, his internal, another creation. So with this internal potency, therefore he, by expanding that, is manifest the Vaikuntha Lokas. Now, this paragraph here, I just want you to notice how what happens in this paragraph is Prabhupada reciting four different shastras, citing four different shastras to show this same thing about the Vaikuntha. From the Narada Pancharatra, it's quoted by Jiva Goswami. These transcendental qualities are there, different from the mundane qualities of ignorance, passion, and goodness. Padma Purana. Here it's mentioned this thing about this Viraja River. Viraja River. Beyond the Viraja, which is described here as a transcendental current, a flow, from the perspiration of the body of the Lord. Now, if it's the Viraja River, that means the Lord here is Karana Dakshayi Vishnu, not Garbha Dakshayi Vishnu. So here with him, this, see, sometimes the Mahatattva is described as a cloud, sometimes as an ocean, and here is a river, which says comes from the body of the Lord. Anyway, that's in the Padma Purana Uttarakhanda. So beyond that Viraja River, the Viraja River, Prabhupada mentions about Buddhists who are, you know, there's the understanding of Vaikuntha. Then there's devotees go there. The Mayavadis at best go to the Brahma Jyoti. But the Buddhists who deny even that and just have Shunyavada, they're Shunyavadis. Prabhupada says somewhere that they go to the Viraja River. They take a bath, they become purified, and they come back down. That's what he says. That's where they go, to bathe in the Viraja River, which is a transcendental current, so. Okay, then the Samkhya Kau Mudi, whatever that is. You know, have you heard of that one? And then the Agama Puranas, which is clear, that's plural. The associated members there are free to go everywhere within the creation of the Lord, and there is no limit to such creation. So they're not restricted. We have a description here. If you really want a really detailed description, read the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Well, there's quite a bit of tourist information there. So here he again goes back to the modes of nature. Because of no passion and ignorance, there's no creation and no annihilation. And he says the duration of life between creation and annihilation is temporary. See, if it's pure sattva, it's not temporary. If it's temporary, it has some, it's bracketed by passion and ignorance. So it has a different quality. When we come to the material world, you see, I'm convinced every jiva in the material world is suffering from a kind of trauma. A deep, you know, fundamental existential trauma, which comes from the loss of sat, the loss of chit, and the loss of ananda. And we get out, and we come to human beings, we have our different personalities as a kind of reaction to that loss, and try to find some artificial way of making up for it in the material world, instinctively. So people become obsessed with becoming strong, and one becomes strong. They want to make up for the loss of sat. You know, people become specialists in some ways. You know? They want to gain knowledge, loss of chit. They're looking for happiness, they're Epicureans, you know, they're gourmets, you know, the loss of ananda. And they try to do different styles. I think that's what happens. Because we're traumatized by it. And our whole personalities are based on this mistake, of this loss. Of course, we don't even know what it is we've lost, but it's very deep within us. We can certainly know. So even this temporary suffering is temporary, the duration is temporary. And again, now he says, no past, present, and future in the estimation of time. Then he says, there's no six material changes. Every living entity he is born, grows, lives for a while. When he says transformation, it means produces some offspring, dwindles, and dies. So none of that's going on. Somewhere Prabhupada remarked, though, that occasionally there's a child born in Vaikuntha. Don't ask me how. I don't remember where it is now, but he says it occasionally can happen. Okay?
What is it? Can you tell me words, some kind of words, what it means to have no present, past, and future?
Well, in the estimation of time, he says, right? No past means, well, think that you have a perfect memory, absolutely perfect memory. There will be no past. So that's coming in a way, there will be no past. So the sooner you remember the past, you're there. You have total recall. It's like being back there. So you don't, nothing fades. So Vaikuntha, nothing fades. In the early days of the Krishna conscious movement, this is how it was generally explained to people. I'm assuming it came from Prabhupada. I've run across a place where he says it. He said, here you take a gulab jamun and you put it in your mouth and you bite into it. And there's an explosion of sweetness. It explodes and then gradually it goes away. In Vaikuntha, it keeps on exploding. So there's no fading away into the past. So everything, there's no loss. And future, well, it's in the sense that a future is made for the fulfillment of our desires, since we are fully fulfilled in everything. There's no sense of moving into something new. You don't leave the present. You don't leave your situation. But yet, in your situation, everything is always increasing. You're looking at the same Krishna, but every minute is growing more beautiful. So in a way, nothing has changed. But you're just realizing what's there, deeper and deeper and deeper. So something like that. But at the same time, there has to be some kind of time, because there are past times. First this happens, that happens. And for there to be past times, it seems there has to be time, a sequence. And it's a sequence of events. So I believe what happens is whenever there's a need for a pastime, since you're not just yogi sitting in suspended animation, since there are pastimes and exchanges, Whenever sequence is needed, some kind of spiritual time comes down. Because it kind of, loop out of the thing, and so it kind of enhances things. But that time doesn't, we aren't controlled by the time. It's summoned up at will and used. And you could have what looks like time travel here, or something like that. Yeah?
Is it something like, it's just time in the sense of, like, this is early morning. Like, so it's, the sun is just rising and it's cool and it's that kind of time. Or it's midday, but it's not like passing time. It's just like, that's the setting.
Yeah, that's right. There's a setting there. Because Krishna does, he has his Astakaliya Leela. You take a 24-hour day and you divide it into 8 segments, like watches, I guess, in the Navy, 8 watches of the day. For the end of night, Radha and Krishna are in one of the bowers, you know, in a kunj, and they wake with the Vrinda Devi sees that they're woken up because the sun is going to come up soon. And then the next thing, you know, Radharani gets up and goes to cook breakfast for Krishna at Nandagram, and Krishna goes out and milks some cow. You know, so there's some the pastime for everything.
So the time is in that sense, like part of the environment.
Yeah, so there's some, it's there. In some way there are different times of the day.
Yeah.
Sometimes you want to have night and sometimes you want to have day. But in one sense, as though all these things are going on simultaneously.
Yeah.
Even that Krishna has his different ages, and Prabhupada explains, like in this world, it's like they appear sequentially. It seems as this Krishna is growing. From infancy to childhood, to adolescence to youth, you know, it seems like he's growing. But he says that's not what happens. What happens is first this part is manifest here, then that part is manifest. They're all eternally happening, but it's just manifest here in different a sequence. So to us it appears like he's changing, but he doesn't. And in the transcendent Goloka Vrindavan, all these ages are simultaneous. I also do not believe there's three-dimensional space. I think three-dimensional space is part of the prison. At least in mathematics, it works out that you can have many more dimensions than three. And in fact, they use it now in physics. They need to use more than three dimensions, but we can only experience three dimensions. But it's mentioned that Brahma has four heads because when he woke up, he looked in four directions, you know. But then if there's Brahmas with many more heads than four, then that implies there's many more directions to look at. Huh?
Well, one thing I come across during my...
So even the maybe material universes with more than three dimensions.
One thing I had come across during my thesis that sort of shed some light on the whole idea of being free from even the present, in regards to essentially the six material changes, the sort of standard authority quoted for that is Yashka's Nirupta, where he defines these six things, and he defines this... what's
Nirupta's a dictionary.
Yeah. And so this one that's called existency or asti,
mm-hmm.
he defines it as existing after having taken birth.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also a verse in the Vishnu Purana where it describes how the Lord is free from these six changes. It describes all the other five and then says, about him it can only be said sadasti, that he always exists.
Mm-hmm.
So Sridhar Swami comments, he says that is always existing means that it doesn't fit this definition of existing.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And so it seems like a present that comes about as a result of a past is what you would mean by a material sense of the present. But that, you know, it's...
Yeah, we say conditioned existence.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. Anything else? Let us go to text number 11. So now there's a description of the inhabitants. Now we're getting down to a concrete description. Now this to me is cinematic. There's a panorama shot, a long tracking shot, and then a close-up. as I do in the movies, So here you have how they look.
This is the close-up?
No, this is panoramic. You'll see from the next one. Because you're seeing them in their vehicles and everything. So they're glowing blue. Shaima usually means dark blue. It's a sky bluish, but anyway. With their eyes like lotus putras, petals. The petals of the flower, the lotus flower, shaped like the petals of the lotus flower. Shaptaputra. Their clothes are yellow. Their eyes are, very attractive. Growing youthful means, what he means by that is just the age of growing youths. In other words, Kaishora means you're teenagers before your growth is stopped. Huh? After that, it's Yovana.
Very
young, 14, 15, they look about like that, right? I think Aishwarya ends at the age of 16. Yeah, that's
right. That's the breaking point.
Yeah, 16.
15, 16.
Yeah, yeah. All of them have their four-handed forms. Sarve Chaptu Bujaha. Nicely decorated with pearl necklaces and so on, effulgent ornamental medallions and everything. So here's just probably every place has the way people look characteristically. And then this show.
I just didn't understand this line. Is perfect. In personal descriptions of transcendence in the scriptures, it indicates that the body features in Vaikuntha Loka are never to be seen in any part of the universe.
Yeah, that's right. They do. When, in other words, in transcendence, there are no forms, there are no qualities, there are no clothes. It means to say that the forms, qualities, paraphernalia are not like those you see in the material world. That's what he's saying there. Okay, then he goes on with the description. Some of them are not all sky bluish, apparently. Some of their complexions are like coral, which tends to be red or pink. Right? Or Vaidurya, which Prabhupada describes as a celestial diamond. A special diamond, not a celestial diamond. Special diamond. What did you say about Vaidurya? It tends to have different colors depending on which angle you look at it.
Yeah,
about Vaidurya story. Maybe different colors.
Krishna is always compared to Vaidurya because he can manifest so many different forms, even though he's one single entity.
Yeah. Did you look it up in the dictionary, Vaidurya? Did they give a Latin name or something?
Let me see. Cat's eye.
It's a cat's eye. Oh, okay.
Yeah. But it's, Baladeva Devotion always calls it a gem in which, manifests different colors depending on which way you look at it.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Your Prabhupada calls it a diamond, but the dictionary calls it a cat's eye, which is, it's not that precious a stone, right?
Oh.
It's called, considered as a semi-precious stone.
But I've never seen any. I've seen it glossed so many times in different copy of text, and they never gloss it like that at all.
Yeah, okay.
I don't want to say this.
Okay. So some inhabitants have the bodily features just like the personality of Godhead, but there are lots of different, according to the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, many different forms are there. Of course, they're animal forms too. They're all devotees who don't have a forearm form because they are taking various animal forms. Like we'll see in this description, bees are mentioned. But in the later description of Vaikuntha, where's the later description and where that one is? Huh? Third canto, yeah. Third, really?
Yeah,
when the Kumaras.
It's like yeah. Chapter 15.
Yeah, yeah, there's a more elaborate description. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It begins the story of what happened to Jayan Vijaya with the four Kumaras. So there you have another look of Vaikuntha. But he mentions that Vaidurya diamond is something worn by those who have Sarupya. But here the text says that they have complexions.
They could be read either way, that they have rays.
Or rays, yeah.
In other words, that they
have
emanate these colors because they're wearing them.
They're wearing them.
That's another good reason.
Okay, either way. Now, here we go. Next text, 13. Here we go to the conveyances. Which have always interested those who like transport. There are various, the word is Vimana. Prabhupada translates as airplanes. These airplanes belong to the Mahatmas. They call this here Mahatma. They belong to them. And they're in these planes. And they also have their consorts with them. Pramada means a beautiful young girl. Beautiful young girls. Their celestial complexions are like lightning. Vidyut. And all these combined together appear just like the sky decorated both clouds and lightning. This is the panoramic view now. So the airplanes are glowing, occupied by the great devotees, the ladies of celestial beauty as brilliant and shining as lightning. As there are airplanes, which I expect he means here, so there must be different types of carriages like airplanes. He calls them carriages like airplanes. But they may not be driven machines. That is to say, they don't have gasoline engines or something like that. And maybe they don't have to have a driver either, just go wherever you want, I suspect. You know, there's this famous occasion where Prabhupada was in an airport in Texas, and he mentioned that he used to have airport interviews, and he mentioned that in the Vedas there's three ways of flying. And he said one way is by airplane, but not like these, with these motors. And then he said, a second way is by being carried aloft by a great number of pigeons. I don't know where that is. Seems to present some technical problems, but he mentions it.
James and the giant peach, except they have seagulls.
These are a great number of pigeons. And the third way, he says, is by sitting on a rug and chanting mantras. So that, everybody, you know, we have these. Everybody's heard these Arabian tales, you know, about magic carpets, flying carpets. So at that point, the reporter perked up and said to Prabhupada, Can you do that? You know, here's the exotic Swami, you know. So Prabhupada said, yes. And then they said, why did you come by TWA Airlines? Prabhupada said, to be one among you. And he really didn't care what he said to reporters, you know, he just liked to goof on them. But they were so ridiculous.
They reporters must have liked that answer.
Huh?
Must have liked that answer.
Yeah, I guess so. Usually he would get so outrageous they wouldn't put it in the some of them maybe understood that they were being goofed on. So then Prabhupada said the airplanes, ladies and gentlemen, cities, houses, and so on. So, but these are all like nothing you've really seen here before. It's not like the, you know, graphics of the Star Wars movies or whatever. No, we haven't got there yet, okay? So now we come down to the, we track in and we come to the, close to the Lord, but first we talk about Sri. Now this verse has no purport, I think. And this is a very beautiful verse. Yes, it's a very poetic verse because you'll notice words for singing occur three times in here. Sri Yatra Rupini Urugaya Padayoho. So at the lotus feet of the Lord. No, this is... Yeah, at the lotus feet of the Lord is called Urugaya. The Lord who is sung of by great devotees. And then we have this word, Vigiyamana, which has, refers to song, and the main verb, Gayati, singing. Right, so it's all about singing. So this is definitely a musical number here, as everybody's singing. So what it says here, she's rendering mana, you know, of respectful services, Bahuda and diverse paraphernalia, Vibhutihi by her, accompanied by her associates. And what it says here, in Prabhupada Prinkam, movement of enjoyment, it seems that the meaning of Prinkam is she's actually swinging. She's doing a service and she's on a swing. She is the black bees are singing, and the bees hum. When the bees hum, they are actually glorifying Lakshmi Devi, right?
Yeah.
They're singing about her, and the bees. This is really. The bees are called the followers of spring, Anugai, because spring is, the word for spring here is Kusumakara, the maker of blossoms. So the bees are especially devoted to springtime because springtime makes flowers blossom and the bees are very happy. So they are the devotees, the followers of spring. So anyway, they're singing, and she's singing, so they're glorifying her while she is singing about Priya Karma, Krishna's Leela, the activity of her beloved. Right? That's really what this very beautiful verse is saying.
Did you say that Prankham was swinging?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Prankham is a swing.
She
is Prankham Shrita.
She's taken shelter of the swing. I'm sitting on a swing, that's what it says. Huh?
No, they're just,
When the bees are buzzing, they're always chanting. They're chanting Hare Krishna or glorifying. Here, Lakshmi. Now this word, I picked up this one because here you get, listen to this. Tadarshisha tatra akila satra tam patim. So he's akila satra tam patim, sriya patim, yajna patim, jagat patim. So, Pati means Lord, right? So here you definitely, we are dealing here now with the feelings of Aishwarya. He's definitely the Lord. And it's emphasized, Akila Sattva Tampatim, the Lord of all the Sattvatas, the great devotees. The Lord of Shri, the goddess of fortune. The Lord of sacrifice and the Lord of the universes. And then, so there he is in that situation. And then he is, she's mentioned there, but now he goes on to his other associates with him right there, who are Sunandananda, Prabala, Arjuna, and so on. Swaparshada, his own associate, the foremost of his associates. Parisevitam vibhum, and then it ends, Parisevitam vibhum, the Lord. Vibhum is like a concluding bang on a bass drum. Vibhum. So we now narrow in on him, and we meet when we speak of a king, right? So he's really in his Aishwarya, confidential associates, secretary, private secretary, aides de camp, ministers. So the Supreme Lord, who's the leader of all living entities, the Lord of all devotee sects. He comes to the end. Lord of all opulences, and so on, is not only the Supreme Person, but also is always surrounded by his intimate associates, all engaged in their loving transcendental service to him. This is his typical characteristic way. He's surrounded by others who are described here. Okay, it's time for 10 after 5. Before we go on to text number 16, we will take a break. Huh? I'm in a break.